The Grillin' Guys.
Welcome back. Yarlis, The Grillin' Guys. Hey, thanks for tuning in. I hope your weekend's starting out right, and you're thinking about what you're going to put on the grill today, because we're talking everything steak, and we got a couple of things that we've talked about. Most of it is the cuts so far, but what do you there's technique that I think we need to touch on now.
Yeah.
And let's talk about gas grill versus charcoal grill versus maybe some people have electric grills. And how much heat?
As long as you have a grill.
Right.
You can't be judging.
Right. But what kind of heat are you cooking these things on?
But you're not a real man if you don't have a charcoal grill.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, yeah. I think everybody needs five grills anyway.
You and I have that quota covered. Yep, I know.
Wow.
That. Yeah,
you do. It's I have the same theory on boats, Conrad. You need a cabin cruiser, you need a sailboat, you need a go fast, you need a fishing boat, and you need a canoe.
Right.
You need them.
Okay. Right. I'll tell the wife.
You right. should.
I need them.
First,
honey.
You need a big barn.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah. But anyway, let me reel this back in.
Why bother?
What's your favorite piece of equipment? Because we both have charcoal grills, smokers, gas grills.
Well, I love doing charcoal. I bought each of my kids so far. Well, each of my boys so far.
They get special treatment.
Well, that's because my son-in-law's, their fathers bought their stuff.
I see.
But I bought my boys, when Alex was in college, I bought him a Weber kettle.
Yep.
Because he got an apartment. He rented a duplex with some guys. And he had to chain it to his deck because it's Western.
Yeah.
You know, there's a little thuggery down there. But he still has it. Now he has it up north in his beautiful home. And I'm rebuilding a Primo for him. And I'm going to bring that up to him. Oops, I hope he doesn't listen. He doesn't.
Right.
Yeah. But
who listens to their dad on the radio?
Yeah.
I mean, come
he
on.
He moved out so he wouldn't have to.
We cover a lot of territory, but he found a spot where we ain't.
You know what's really satisfying is, though, him and Jordan still will text me or call me and say, hey, I'm doing this and that. What should I do?
Right.
It's like, that's nice.
Yeah.
I taught you that already.
Yeah. Yeah. You didn't listen, boy. Yeah.
But so Weber kettle's nice if you want charcoal. Mm-hmm. You know, if you can get your hands on some good lump charcoal, that's the preference.
It's in a lot of stores, and people ask why lump versus briquette. Give them the answer.
Yeah, and briquettes, they have too many other ingredients in them, especially the biggest brand out there. But Royal makes a briquette that's a little better, but it's still a briquette.
Right.
And it's going to be cooler. It's going to get more ash. There's no good reason to use a briquette.
Right. So the lump charcoal is hardwood that has been charred, cooled down, put in a bag, and sold to you. And it ignites, it burns smooth, it's hotter. And when you're done, you can snuff it out and relight it. You can never do that with a briquette. Once the briquette cools down, it crumbles and falls apart.
Yeah, and I'd have to say Royal Oak is my favorite.
Yeah.
Parker Pure Mountain Charcoal is right there with it, just as good, but it's not sold in Michigan. I've actually been to that kiln. Wonderful family. There are brands I don't care for, and I won't say who they are, but there's one that's in a lot of hardware stores and big brands, and you'll find, and Rob Russell clued me onto this years ago, you'll find that, because when you make charcoal, you take wood and burn it, right? And then you snuff the fire out. Well, what one brand uses is flooring.
Oh.
And what he noticed was there was actually nails in some of the charcoal. And it's like, that's ridiculous.
Well, I have purchased, again, we don't throw anybody under the bus. I've purchased charcoal from a major supplier of food services, and I have found a dozen rocks.
That's
that
always
bottom
happens.
Of my bag.
But that always happens. I don't think that's deliberate. See, these guys in these kilns, they build these massive fires, and I've been to quite a few of them. And some of them don't have they don't have cement floors in them. Some do, some don't. But they take great big front end loaders in. And so they crisscross all these side cuts of logs, you know, when they're squaring up a log, you're going to trim it, and you're going to get all the flats.
Right.
And they buy those real cheap, and then they crisscross them to burn them, and then they get them going really good, and then they snuff the fire out. And it just smolders down, and it gives you a bunch of charred wood. That's right. Charcoal.
Right.
So then they take a big front end loader into that kiln, and they scoop it up. And I think sometimes in the process, they just pick up gravel and stuff.
Right.
I hate to say it. Yeah. I don't think they're deliberately trying to throw a rock in each bag.
Yeah, because they do sell it by the pound, though.
Yeah, but but they sell it pretty cheap compared to all the work that goes into it.
Oh, yeah.
And yep. You can actually make your own, and I've been tempted to make one of those little devices to make charcoal with because I have so much wood.
Okay, so how do we determine when a steak is done? It's temperature.
I apologize. You're right. But I went down a bunny trail on charcoal. Uh-huh. And you had asked me what's my favorite charcoal grill, and it's my Cajun.
Okay.
From T-Gid.
Yeah.
It's sentimental.
Yeah.
Well, but
the reason that it is it has a coal bed. We'll get to the done.
But they don't even make them anymore.
Right.
Unfortunately.
But the coal bed moves up and down, so yeah. You can get the heat closer to your product on the grill or farther away, and that has a lot to do with the temperature and the doneness.
And T-Gid, if you're listening, and Kurt, if you're listening with him, go over and see Greg and kick him in the pants and tell him to get that fab shop up and running again because we need some Cajuns up here.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Although that new seasoning sounds good. Holy cow, we're all over the map today. But
that's why we're the grilling guys and we're not the actuaries.
Right. Yeah, there's no science to what we're doing.
I beg to differ.
Right. Yeah. At least that we're going to explain to you. But
if I had a nice Oberon in my hand right now, I'd probably be able to do that.
Yeah, it'd focus him right in. He'd be dialed right in, wouldn't he?
Sure.
Well, they just came out. My wife came home with a 12-pack. I was pretty proud of her. It's like, oh, she said, well, Oberon, it's a tradition. I said, yeah, you're right.
Yeah,
that's cool.
Right.
That's cool. So how to tell how well your steak is done?
Are you ready to talk about that
now? Use the finger method.
Which finger?
Pull my finger.
He just had his colonoscopy, so this is a bad method.
The good news was it was a small-handed Asian guy. It wasn't a big-handed Dutch guy.
Yeah. So did you get his number?
Yeah.
They call him Big Knuckles.
One Hung Long.
No, but anyway. Right.
So
finger method.
Yes. Conrad, I hope you'll cut that part out.
I wouldn't. That's the best thing we had all day.
So you take your hand and you take your thumb and touch your pinky.
Right.
And that muscle between your forefinger and your thumb is going to have a certain texture to it. And feel that, and then do your ring finger, then do your middle finger, and then do your pointer finger. The pinky is going to be the toughest, strongest, because you're flexing your hand the hardest. And then by the time you get to your forefinger, it's real soft, and that's going to be rare. So forefinger's rare, middle finger's medium, ring finger's medium well, and pinky's well.
Right.
And you somewhere
just,
in
just,
there.
Just run your thumb, touch those fingers to your thumb while you've got your other hand between your thumb and your index finger down by the base.
And then rub your head and pat your belly.
Right. But you can feel it tighten up.
Or just go to thegrillingguys.com. Look over on the right and see this sign that says ThermoWorks. They make the thermal pen in America. It's the fastest, best, American-made. It's an amazing...
it's a digital thermometer.
Probe.
Is what you're looking
at.
Yeah,
it looks like a jackknife you put in your pocket. You pull it out. It's got this long prick on the end of it. And you put it in your meat. And within 1 second, it tells you the temperature.
Right. So if you're going to do that... medium rare is what temperature?
130.
Okay, but when do you take it off?
Oh, medium rare?
Yeah, medium rare.
140. Depends on who you talk to.
Right, but where I'm going is that...
135, I always go to 135.
Okay, and it's on the grill, and if you're registering that 135 temperature, when you take it off, it's probably going to go up another 3 to 5 degrees before it starts to cool. So
might want to give it an ice bath then.
Well, no. What I'm thinking is take it off at about 130,
yep.
And you'll end up at 135.
Again, depends on the cut too, how thick it is,
right.
You know, how consistent it is.
But good rule of thumb is that you take it off 5 degrees below where you want to serve it, and because most steaks are an inch and. They'll be they'll heat up when you
I find that the bigger muscles do rise. I don't always find steaks rising much because I'm usually putting them on a platter, and the platter is instantly taking the heat out of them. So yep. I but like with a butt or a brisket, it'll definitely keep rising.
Yep. You've been listening to Grilling Guys on the Grilling Guys Talk Network. We appreciate you tuning in. I hope you got one or two tips out
hope
of the
so.
Steak. There was a lot on this show plan that we never touched on, but there's so much we touched.
There's a reason for that.
Right. All right. Take care. Get out in your backyard, create some grill envy, and we'll talk with you next week.
See ya.